Thank you for attending this initiation ceremony. Initiation is the third step in our process of developing Krishna consciousness or faith. First is a little faith, a little liking for Krishna consciousness, and then to associate with devotees. And when we associate with devotees, we learn that we're actually spiritual souls, and that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that all of us are Krishna's eternal servants. And that there is a process by which we can revive that relation with Krishna, called devotional service. And part of that process is to accept initiation. Initiation means to follow the process by which we can gradually make progress to revive our relation with Krishna. So part of that process is to accept a spiritual master in the line of disciple succession coming from Lord Krishna. The idea being that Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita 5,000 years ago, and the same message was delivered to his disciple, and that knowledge is passed down from spiritual master to disciple. So, of course, in ISKCON, we have many devotees passing on that knowledge. And ultimately, we have a system of governance called the GBC body that Prabhupada set up to oversee that knowledge and the activities which are in relationship to that knowledge, namely the spreading of Krishna, the performance of asana bhakti and the spreading of Krishna consciousness, are more or less regulated and overseen by a GVC body, and locally by different authorities such as temple presidents, etc. And also, in other words, everyone in our society has some obligation, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, to try to hear that knowledge, apply it within one's life, and then to distribute it to others. But the role of the spiritual master in ISKCON, although sometimes not so clear, is not separate from everyone else within the society performing that mission. The spiritual master has no independent authority, because all authority comes from Krishna. And through our founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada, who set up the society and has given everyone responsibility. So mainly the spiritual master is given the responsibility to help the disciple learn how to work within a society of many different authorities, spiritual and managerial. It's a cooperative society. And at the same time, every one of us has the obligation as preachers to convey the knowledge of how to make progress in Krishna consciousness according to time, place, and audience. And of course, part of that is the deliverance of a spiritual name and a vow, making a vow to chant a certain number of rounds a day and follow certain principles. So that vow should be made to a person who represents Krishna in the disciple succession. Generally, we don't keep vows we make to fires or things like that. So generally, vows are made to persons. We feel obligated more to a person than we do to something impersonal. Therefore, these basic vows are what's given at the time of initiation, at least first initiation. And the idea is that the holy name is sufficient if we learn how to chant offenselessly in order to actually directly revive our relation with Krishna, because Krishna and his name are non-different. And as soon as we chant Hare Krishna with purity and sincerity, then at once Krishna will appear to us and our spiritual life will be fully developed. But of course that's a gradual process, and therefore we have to learn gradually how to avoid the offenses against the holy name, at the same time work in the society of devotees, cultivate Krishna consciousness, and also distribute Krishna consciousness to others in service to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his mission. So there are 10 offenses while chanting the holy name we should avoid. First offense is to blaspheme devotees who have dedicated their lives while propagating the holy name of the Lord. So ultimately that actually means we should serve the devotees, or to speak of unnecessarily criticizing them, because devotees are to different degrees engaged in the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and therefore are his instruments working under the consecutive disciples' succession, and therefore we should try to assist them, as we should try to assist anyone we meet to help them become Krishna conscious. So generally most criticism is unnecessary and will not actually enthuse us to serve the devotees, but generally has the opposite effect. And if we're not enthused to serve the devotees, we probably won't be enthused to serve Krishna either. Second offense, consider the names of the demigods, such as Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, to be equal to or independent of the holy name of Lord Vishnu. That Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, they're great devotees of Lord Krishna, and therefore they're honored by us, but they only have some of the qualities of Krishna. They're not the full representative of Krishna. And generally speaking, most of us won't have eternal relationships, especially with Lord Brahma, there's no eternal relationship. And with Lord Shiva, generally we won't have an eternal relationship either, except for the fact that Lord Shiva is an eternal person also, and therefore we're eternally, he's the greatest Vaishnava. Therefore we have a relationship of his servant, but we serve him and everyone else by first understanding our relation with Lord Krishna. Third offense is to minimize or disobey the orders of the spiritual master, or consider him an ordinary person. The spiritual master is one who's supposed to be delivering the knowledge of Krishna in disciples' succession, and therefore it is not that he is necessarily, you know, in our vision or other vision, perfect. But if he's delivering perfect knowledge, then in that sense he's perfect. Anyone who delivers perfect knowledge, they're doing a perfect thing. They themselves may not have fully understood that perfect knowledge, but their duty, as everyone else's duty, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given us, is to deliver that perfect knowledge to others. And that way we'll become perfect, and others will become perfect too. And even if the person delivering the knowledge is not perfect, but if he delivers perfect knowledge and we take it up, then we'll become perfect. Just like the postman may give us instructions or give us some money coming from a distant place. So he may not be a perfect postman, but if the message he's delivering is perfect and we take it up, then we become perfect. The fourth offense is to consider blasting the Vedic literature, a literature in pursuance of the Vedic version. Generally that means we should try to understand what's in the Vedas according to our capacity and apply it to become Krishna conscious. Otherwise there are so many things in the Vedas we're just not capable of understanding. So neither we should blindly accept them, nor should we blindly reject them. But we should try to find that part of the Vedic literature, such as in the Bhagavad Gita, that is understandable and applicable within our devotional life so that we can make progress towards really realizing our relationship with Krishna. Probably for most of us, we probably won't go to Brahma Loka or Indra Loka to verify that Brahma has four heads or how many heads he has. So these things are not very important. That there is controllers within the universe that are organizing things and that we're dependent upon, and especially to provide the necessities of life, and that they themselves are servants of Krishna, this is something that we should try to understand within our ability. Whether we're going to see, you know, Lord Indra with all his eyes is another thing, but that's not really necessary for our spiritual advancement. But to accept that there's a God and he has his representatives and we should try to serve them, that's necessary, both in our practical devotional service and to understand that this universe is also governed, has governance behind it. The next offense is to consider the glories of chanting Hare Krishna as imagination or give some interpretation of the holy name of the Lord or similar. that the fact that Krishna and his name are not different are, may not be fully realized by us. Of course, if we chant Hare Krishna, we can see it's obviously something different from some ordinary vibration. Otherwise, we couldn't continuously chant it. How it's not different from Krishna will gradually be realized by us when we can chant offenselessly. But right now, we're not even conscious of the fact that who we are, what to speak of who the holy name is. So we may not be fully realized in the holy name. We're not even fully realized in our own spiritual identity. What to speak of the fact that we're not the body. First we have to find out who we're not, namely the body. Then we'll find out who we are. And then gradually we'll realize that Krishna and his name are non-different. Of course that goes simultaneously by the chanting of the holy name without offense. These things are simultaneously realized that Krishna and his name are non-different. And that who we are, who we're not, namely the body, and who we actually are. Just like with the rising of the sun, then automatically all the darkness goes away and we can see the sun and we can see ourselves and everything else in the light of the sun. Seventh offense is to commit sinful activities on the strength of chanting the holy name. We shouldn't think that we, on the basis of some chanting the holy name, we can allow our minds to deviate to other things or perform activities that are not in relationship with Krishna consciousness because we'll be protected by the holy name. We might be protected by the holy name, but at the same time we'll also receive the reactions for the offense of thinking like that, that we can get away with sinful activities on the strength of chanting the holy name. The eighth offense is to consider the chanting Hare Krishna to be one of the auspicious ritualistic activities or from the Vedas, the spiritual activities of karmakanda. So by karmakanda activities, one can achieve fabulous results in the material world, from material opulence, his mystic powers, to lordship over vast realms of the universe. But these are all temporary. And then the one breath of inhalation of Mahavishnu, they'll all be vanished. So they're not, but anything performed in devotional service with sincerity and with knowledge will bear permanent results and therefore cannot be compared with anything temporary. The ninth offense is instruct the faithless person without the glory of the holy name. We have plenty of things to instruct them. We don't have to. For instance, we can begin by trying to explain to people the difference between themselves and their body, and if they're not willing to listen to that, then how are they going to find out, how are they going to appreciate anything beyond that? So we should try to instruct people appropriately. Otherwise, we'll confuse them or discourage them or get them angry. And as a result of that, we'll become discouraged, generally speaking, or confused and frustrated ourselves. So rather than waste time, we should try to instruct people appropriately or not even bother instructing them. Prabhupada did not always preach to everyone. Some ladies, for instance, once came to him from some mystic group who performed silent meditation, and they're invited to go into Prabhupada's darshan room, and Prabhupada was sitting there for 20 minutes, and they came out, they were very enthused because Prabhupada didn't say a word to them during the whole 20 minutes. They thought he was a perfect example of mystic meditation. So sometimes we also have to remain silent when dealing with people. Or Prabhupada used to sometimes talk appropriately, according to what people could understand. Like he didn't always say Hare Krishna. Sometimes he said good day to people. So that takes some spiritual intelligence to figure out what to say and who to say it to. And when to say it. And the tenth offense is not to have complete faith in the chanting of the holy names and to maintain material attachments even after understanding so many instructions on this matter. So we have to concentrate on chanting. We have to concentrate in such a way that not simply out of anxiety or fear or some other mentality. We have to concentrate out of hope and aspiration that we can actually get Krishna's association and come to a platform of loving exchanges with Krishna just by chanting his holy name. But if we're deviated to other topics, then without Krishna being present, then we remain still in the illusory energy. Therefore, we have to avoid having our mind flicker from one topic to the other by trying to actually hear, because that will capture the mind, and chant sweetly, happily, just like Prabhupada said, like a child lovingly calling for its mother in separation. And that way we'll get Krishna's association, and our mind will become very happy and cease from thinking about other things, because it'll feel satisfied. But that takes some practice and ultimately takes some effort on our part, not only to avoid activities during the day which agitate our minds by material conceptions, because it's not that during the day we're going to engage in all kinds of sense gratificatory activities and mental speculation, and then 2 hours a day we're going to try and force our minds to think about Krishna, because they'll think about all the things we were doing during the day which are outside of Krishna consciousness. So maybe after a couple of hours our mind might calm down a little bit, so we think about Krishna a little bit, then we go back to our materialistic activities. So we should try to steady the mind during the chanting and listen attentively and call out feelingly to Krishna, happily. And at the same time during the day, try to make our mission that whoever we meet, we try to help them become Krishna conscious. We dedicate our activities in that way. That way the chanting will be much more effective. We do chant Hare Krishna and Japa. And of course, hopefully during the day we'll chant Hare Krishna too. Not only 16 rounds, but we'll chant more japa. And we'll be inspired to remember and chant Krishna's name all the time. Krishna is not only in the temple, he's in every atom throughout the whole universe. And his service is available anytime, to anyone, any place. Okay, so we'll stop there. Now we'll have giving the beads, I guess. So you can pay obeisances to Prabhupada and to Gaurani Deities, Panchatattva.